Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, your weekly dose of Porsche culture. With Tech Talk, Heritage, the Ren Builds playlists, along with a massive dollop of waffle, we'll keep you entertained. So subscribe now on any podcast streaming service and YouTube. Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and wow, this is quite nice. It's been a long, or feels like a very long time since I've done one of these intros, but it's lovely to be back. Thank you so much for joining me again. Thank you especially if you are returning and you were one of the people that have messaged me to say, when's the next episode going to be out? It's been a real joy to know that actually there are people out there waiting for these episodes to restart. So thank you for your patience. It's much appreciated. Not a long intro because the episode itself is about an hour long, so lots to hear about with my talk with Richard Tuthill. But I wanted to go into a few little things before we get started into that. So a bit of a reason for the break, partly to kind of sit and think about really what's my motivation with all this. It can be quite tricky to maintain tempo, especially when it's the summertime and there's shows and I want to be outside and I want to be interacting with people and driving the car and going on events or going on trips, and then shooting episodes and then recording them, editing those episodes and then getting them ready to go out. Trying to do all of that at once is quite tricky. And then if you put something out that you're not completely proud of, or this is what I found anyway, it feels like a missed opportunity. So a bit of a reflection time on what my approach will be from now on. I think that, you know, just certainly within the last few episodes that you'd have heard in the previous season, you will have noticed that, yeah, you know, it was getting me down a little bit. And actually, it was really important to take some time out, and particularly thinking about Michael Barth and the What Was the Porsche Cool podcast. In fact, I will give you a little this week's recommendation. If you haven't been and heard and listened to those previous episodes that Michael Barth put out, do. There's loads and loads and loads of them. Similar to Your Porsche Stories, that's kind of where I got the genesis of that from. By the way, those options are still open to you. If you've got a really interesting story, give me a shout on Instagram. The Rengineering podcast on Instagram now, not at Rengineering UK. So the Rengineering podcast. So slide into DMs there or info@rengineering.com. But yeah, so Michael Barth had a ton of episodes banked. So a big shout out to Michael. I hope you're doing well. But actually a bit of a reflection on him wrapping up doing that podcast. And I think I kind of hit a similar point, really, that actually you just get seriously fatigued if you've got a busy job, busy life, and in my case as well, trying to build a car at the same time. So yeah, tricky. But that break, that Christmas period, that sort of bit of relaxation, and then sort of made the decision that actually I'm going to focus on quality. I'm going to do my absolute best with each episode, particularly when there's special guests that are taking a long time to get booked and a long time to get shot, like Richard. I feel like I owe it to those people to do it justice for them as well. And for you, for listening. So, or if you're going to watch on YouTube, again, nice little segue onto the kind of slight difference that will be on YouTube. Previously, what I've done is I've kind of put the entire podcast out on YouTube. I think reality is what I'll do is I'll kind of, and I've done this with this version, this podcast with Richard Tuthill, is condense it slightly. So the bulk of it will still be on there, but it'll be condensed. And then you get some of the extras in the audio. So yeah, you can listen to and watch either or. There's a really cool intro that you obviously, if you're watching this, won't necessarily see, or listening to this, you won't necessarily see. But if you watch it on YouTube, you will. Or I'm going to create a reel as well, a reel intro for Instagram as well with that same piece of content as well. The point being, it's going to be about quality. That's the focus. So sometimes there might be a little bit of a gap between episodes. All that means is I'm sat there editing and it's taking a little time. So the frequency might not be quite the same, but what you'll get is a better experience and a better listening experience. So that's what happened. What I will say is there are other stuff that happened in that gap. Rengineering.com is now live. You can go onto the website and see and read all about me and re-engineering the plans, and also you'll get to see some of the options about having your own Cayman 718 or 981 build, if that's what you're interested in. My car is very, very nearly finished. It will do all the shows, mags, YouTube videos, all of that's going to happen this year. So there'll be a lot of promo around my car. but actually what that means is now that's finished, or very, very close to being finished, I definitely know what it looks like finished. That means then I could potentially offer that out to you if you're listening to this and you've got anything from a Boxster Spider to a GT4, even a GT4 RS or a Cayman S or base model, all of those we can do something with you as well if you're interested. To the extent where there's an option for an owner, and if you're listening to this and you have a white 981 Boxster Spider and you're interested in doing something ridiculously cool, Grant Larson, the original designer of the Boxster and Cayman, has offered to support re-engineering and building a Berg Spider special edition car. Now, that means we're not going to rip the windscreen off your car, so don't worry. And if you haven't seen the Berg Spider before, go and have a quick look. But taking a really strong influence from the Berg Spider that he designed and produced, and bringing that to a Boxster Spider 981. So if you're listening to this and you have a 981 white Boxster Spider and you are interested, shoot me an email, info@reengineering.com, and you could potentially be the person that gets that opportunity to have your very own Berg Spider signed off by the guy from Porsche that designed the Boxster and the Cayman. I'm going to say too much more about that because the designs are kind of behind lock and key, but that client that joins that program will have the first and potentially one of a very, very limited amount of those cars being run, signed off by Grant Larson. Anyway, we'll come back to that another day. So that's what's been happening. Reengineering.com is up. Quality, not quantity. The year is filling up. There is a page on the website that talks about where I'm going to be this year. But actually, even since that was updated, there's been more dropping as well. So I will update that calendar. That calendar will tell you literally where I'm going to be the entire year. So go and have a look at that. Also, when Mick's on the channel as well, we'll bring it back up and talk about a bit more and what we're going to go and do together as well. I want to talk a little bit about some of the collaborations and partnerships. I'm going to focus on one again this week, and that's Legends Drivers Club. I've mentioned Legends lots of times. Andre is a really good friend of mine. We talk almost every day. But yeah, if you're going to join a club or you're going to go to some events, I cannot recommend those Legends Drivers Club's events highly enough. They're nearly always run at either not-for-profit or on the edge of not-for-profit. Very little take-gets. It's not a huge business launch thing for Andre. His focus and commitment is to the community to build a really inclusive place where these events are put on that are affordable for people, that allow people to come and join in and get involved in the community. That's what's at my heart too. I absolutely love the approach that he takes. Not only that, the venues that he picks up, Hever Castle last year was beautiful. Goodwood's been a recurring event and that's growing as well. I laughed and joked to him and said in 3 or 4 years time we'll have an empire, which I think scared the crap out of him. But the important thing is he's a lovely, lovely chap. Everybody that goes to those events comes away and says I'm definitely going back. So hot tip, head over to Legends Drivers Club on Instagram, keep an eye on the events that he puts up. They're that popular now that they almost immediately sell out within an hour. So that just gives you an idea of the value to people that have gone to those events so far. So head over to Legends Drivers Club, get yourself along with one of those events. I'm at lots of them, not all of them, because some of them are further down south and it's possible for me to attend, but I'm at lots of them. So yeah, always come and say hello to me as well. Without further ado, as I said, this is a longer episode. I don't even know where you start with Richard Tuthill. He's an elusive guy. He's very difficult to pin down. He's all over the world all of the time. And when he's not and he's in the country, he has masses of commitments as well. So it took the best part of 18 months to get this booked, shot, and to the point where we are now. So I want to extend a big thanks out to Laura from Tut Hill, who's helped make all of this happen, but also to Richard himself as well. Richard, if you're listening to this, thank you again for your time. It was an absolute pleasure. I'm not going to go on too much more. I'll catch you back up at the end. Richard Tuthill, rally driver, business owner, hero, engineer and car designer. Ultimately, after spending an hour talking to the man himself, I realised this isn't a man that grew to love motorsport and Porsche. They're a part of him, and at this stage in his life and career, stopping just is not an option. The full episode is live now on all podcast streaming services, but grab a coffee and let's learn all about what makes Mr. Richard Tuthill tick.
30 kilometres with no real notes. Need to have a sit down moment, think about that, contemplate my existence, because that was sensational. What's it like on the road? Not like many things I've driven. Now we're talking. He's made a monster.
Welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to, wow, I can't even believe I'm going to say this, I'm at Tut Hill Porsche. Whether you've seen this chap rip around a forest in a rally stage, or whether you've seen the 911K episode with Chris Harris being taught how to drive, or the GT1 more recently and that being launched, I'm sat with Richard Tut Hill. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
Good.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. So we've got this unscripted time together, and the format's always the same. So I start in your earliest days. So if I can take you right back to being a child, where did cars come in? Where's the kind of first earliest memories of a car, or kind of being inspired by motorsport or cars, anything like that?
Probably in that field behind us. I think we can see it. Yeah.
Yeah, you can see it. You can just see it. Yeah.
I mean, first major memory was rolling a VW Beetle in that field, and I was 8. So that was a good start.
You obviously didn't just walk over at 8 years old, grab a VW Beetle and then go, you know what, I'm going to roll it in that field. How did that happen?
I started driving before I was 8, obviously, because I had to get to the point where I was able to roll it. But if I'm honest, the first time I drove a Beetle was in that field.
Right.
To give you a clue, I've lived here all my life.
Wow, okay, right.
So as a family, my family moved away here for probably 15 years. But other than that, I'm back here, or family is back here. Dad moved here when he was 17.
Right, okay. Wow,
so it's really big. Anything car-based started here. And I've got a million memories. Rolling a Beetle is one of them. Road testing a Mark 1 Golf GTI rally car whilst Dad was trying to sell it. It was a Group A car, and I was in the back, literally on the A361 holding onto a roll cage.
I was about to say, there's no back seat, so you must have been doing a bit of the...
You sort of can't imagine it. So that's sort of 1982, let's say.
Yeah.
I don't know, whenever that was, but it was the 80s. Literally in the back of a Mark 1 Golf GTI Group A rally car holding onto the roll cage during a sales demonstration. I remember sitting with Mark Lovell in a rally car in a Welsh forest. Again, same thing actually with Dad in a Golf, probably then Mark II Golf. And I was so small, I slipped under the seat belts. Wow. During the stage. It was a test,
yeah.
Obviously. He didn't slow down. I remember that. I remember a Quattro going off the start line of the RAC rally. So there's a few memories.
That's unreal as well, because those are kind of those hardwired, burnt in memories, you know, like you watch the CRT TV, it's been on the same Telefax page for the last 20 years and it just still says Telefax, right?
That's
kind of the same.
Whatever stuff. Happened to that? That's brilliant. Do you remember that?
I booked holidays off that.
I probably tried, but we never went on holiday. But I do remember that. Jeez, that was brilliant.
Mm.
You have to wait for each page to scroll. You could punch
some numbers in and then it would... And then it goes to a different page, yeah.
It's that type of thing. All my early driving, most of which was known about. I'd rarely nick a car. I didn't do any of that. But I did crash a few scrape, let's say, a few cars along the way. Mum's 504 family estate. But I never.
With them knowing you were driving it, or did you just grab the keys off the table?
There was a bit of a thing. If there was a car, it didn't really matter. Whatever I had to do to get it started, I could. And usually it would be siphoning a bit of fuel and finding a battery. It was never that advanced. But my elder brother wasn't that way inclined, really. Mm. My sister was always game. She actually ended up co-driving for me. But basically, we used to just mess around here in the holidays on BMXs and driving Beetles or Saab 95. That's a bit niche.
That's very niche, but cool car, though.
Cool car. Didn't roll that. Anyway, that's
quick
where
question.
We'll
put a quick pause on that. Do any of these cars still exist? Are there a barn somewhere where you've got this Saab 95 that's kind of just parked one day and never disappeared?
The original family Saab 95 estate is still on the site somewhere.
Wicked.
That's probably it.
Mm.
I mean, we're talking the Beetle I rolled was, you know, I bought it for 50 quid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Plenty farm car.
Yeah, absolutely. So no. It all started here, and it's still going. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So we've got a taster for motorsport. We've got that kind of the red hot line that goes straight through. We've got the kind of rolling a Beetle, which we could do 25 minutes just on that, but we won't. Where did Porsche come in? So is it just part of the rallying scene? Because obviously that was kind of a big part of the early 80s and mid 80s. Porsche was starting to rally heavily. So did your dad kind of, was he involved in Porsche rallying? And
yeah,
that's how you got into it?
The Porsche thing, reasonably well documented. David Richards, who is one of the world's leading motorsport what's the right word to use? I don't know. It'd be something to be a good word.
A great
to use.
Word. Stick in the comments whatever that word is.
There's nothing David hasn't done and continues to do. Interestingly, yesterday their latest project, for which will debut in Dakar, or its first Dakar will be this year. That NASA Al Attiyah won his first stage in the Morocco Desert Challenge yesterday, and that's the new Dacia.
Okay, yeah.
David came up, they were sort of social friends, Dad and David, and he needed a white Porsche, which is in the building.
We'll get some B-roll of that as well.
Which is the first Porsche rally car that probably had Rothmans painted on it.
That's so cool.
So he wanted a car, Dad said, what do you want it for? He said, it's a show car. Dad says, okay, you can have my car and buy my car, subject to me being able to do some work on it.
Mm.
So that led to, I imagine, 15, 20 years of work with David through Rothmans SCRS, BMW M3, Metro 604, Subaru Legacy, Subaru Impreza, and we stopped when the first WRC car was built.
Wow.
But up until that point, plus or minus, all of the crash repair, shell repair, and paint work was done here for all of those cars. So
that's wild. And you were this, how old were you at this point?
I was in and around, so I would have been 10 in 1984, which was Group B.
Yeah.
I got a job working for ProDrive as a gardener in my school holidays at the age of 12, 13. With my brother, we used to go down there. He didn't last that long. I graduated to car cleaning, helicopter cleaning, you name it. And ultimately, through my university years, David always supported everything I did. I drove for them and helped develop the ProDrive Group N Subaru Impreza. But the Porsche thing really took off when the old man won London to Sydney in 91.
Wow.
Or 92 or 93. I'm not very good with dates.
Again, stick in the comments below. There's going to be some rally aficionados that are going to know all these dates. I'm thinking back to my childhood, and there used to be a rally special stage at Cheltenham Racecourse where I grew up.
Yeah, I did that in 1999, RAC Rally.
Yeah, I may have been one of those little kids clinging onto the outside of the railings looking in. So
yeah, that was nearly a very good rally for us.
Mm.
Semi went wrong. Something to do with gearboxes at the end of it, but we finished second Group N car. I think we were beaten by Raymond Ferreros. That was Subaru's best ever result in a Group N World Championship rally.
Wow.
And we went into the last stage. We had a choice. I could either have a gearbox with reverse, but but it was a high ratio or no reverse and low ratio. We'd have three gearboxes during the rally. It was a bit of a thing. Anyway, 3 miles into the last stage, and I think we went in either neck and neck or 3 seconds down. It was plus or minus. It was very, very close. Mm. We lost third gear after the first 2Ks of the stage, so we finished second. Great rally.
So I want to get back to that. You're following your dad around. I wanted this to be sort of a visual thing as well. So you're kind of, I don't know how, were you just super enthusiastic, or were you aware of how exciting it all was and how, to an extent, privileged it was to be connected to motorsport, to high level motorsport?
I don't think you ever do.
Were you just in the moment I'm going here today and that's never, cool too?
You never do. But having said that, growing up, we didn't do much motorsport. We were involved in it through Pro Drive activities.
Yeah.
It was originally DR Autosport. So it wasn't, so if I now fast forward 30, 40 years, then my kids are seeing it in a different way. So they are coming, the two boys have both been on the Safari Rally. I mean, that's a game-changing life experience.
Yeah.
If they're not at school, then they come to Paul Ricard and spend a weekend racing. So they're seeing it in a very different way than I saw it, because then we weren't running. We weren't running a motorsport business.
Yeah.
And in the first instance, in the beginning of historic rallying, you built a car for someone, you sent it to them, and it was sort of everyone was running their own car. There was not so many teams around.
Yeah.
So I was aware of it, but not in the same way as we are now. Now that's probably the most accurate reflection. Yeah. The fact is, I lived here.
Yeah.
And my elder brother, who's only a year older than me, I think he bore the brunt of it, bless him.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... I think he went on the Granite City Rally at the age of about three.
Wow.
Chucked in the back of a van with two of the mechanics. Mum didn't go. So it was Tommy, two mechanics, and Dad on a rally. And driving to the Granite City Rally, I don't think I've ever driven that far.
No.
In this country. So he got ruined. So I probably came along just in this sort of perfect pocket where I could...
Yeah.
Not be...
you weren't kind of ferried around in the same... Yeah, you weren't kind of just...
Dumped.
Yeah, unceremoniously dumped. And actually, I don't know if you guys watching this are into rallying or whether this is a Porsche thing for you, but I have a good friend of mine, Alistair Moffitt, who's a BTRDA auto test champion, but also did some Group N stuff. I did Somerset stages with him as a chase in the chase car. And it's so unceremonious. There's no frills. It doesn't matter how high up the stack you are. There's somebody out there with a wet sponge at 3 a.m, kind of cleaning something down to keep the windscreen clear or something like that. It's all encompassing, and you are in rallying when you're in rallying.
Yeah, and I think I had an experience probably now 10 years ago, maybe more. So we support our clients everywhere.
Mm.
So they literally have to book a flight, and there's nothing we won't do for them.
Amazing.
Or at least nothing we won't try and do for them. And then I went back and I did a rally with a client. And we drove from here in the rally car, did a one-day rally based in Welshpool, and drove home. And it was a really great experience just to remember what is at the heart of rallying. And it's just as you described. And now my son, who's just, Charlie, has just done in the middle of his first season of rallying.
Successfully as well.
He's doing all right, yeah. He's better than me, which is a great start. It's back to... really basic, going out, simple couple of guys. I mean, he's much more fortunate than I am, but that's a generational thing. I drove to Belfast. It took me 24 hours to drive there and back in one go, like you did. And I picked up a bare shell Vauxhall Nova with a bag of bits from a mate I worked with at ProDrive, a wonderful man called Ian Bishop. But I had to drive 24 hours and I bought back a bare shell. I then built it.
Yeah.
Charlie turned up on a Friday afternoon from school and I presented him with an MG, the mighty MG, the only non-Porsche on site, but it does identify as a Porsche, which I think these days is acceptable.
That's just about all right.
Yes, that's okay. So it's you can't help it. I still wanted to be at school. I was buried in this stuff from a very early age. And I think that's a really, really good thing on the one hand. There is a downside. And should anyone working in the building today laugh when they hear this. Take it with a pinch of salt.
I think I know where you're going to go with this, but I'll check in after.
I can
this.
Do every single job.
Okay.
In the building.
Yeah.
And now I can't do it as well as the boys who are doing it every single day, but I can when I'm not one-handed.
When you're not one-handed, yeah.
Pretty much do anything. And so that has a huge strength, but I think there's a weakness in there somewhere.
Mm.
But I think, ask me the same question in 20 years' time, I'll tell you whether that weakness is a thing or not, because if the kids do get involved in the business, their upbringing has been different to mine.
Yeah.
How important that is, I don't know, but my father's an exceptional bloke. And so it is what it is.
To give you my perspective on that, I my brain went immediately to Gordon Murray as another good example of somebody that is a do-everything person, right? To be really, truly successful, to kind of have that, you need somebody that's got that, they can understand and communicate on the same level as someone that's a complete pro and an expert in their field. And if they're trying to communicate to you something that you don't understand, it's quite difficult to get that messaging right. But actually, even if you're not necessarily doing it, they're saying to you, honestly, Richard, we need to go down whatever it is. You can kind of, okay, well, I totally understand what you're talking about and let's make the decision together. So
yeah, I think the latest project, which no doubt we'll talk about, is this GT1, which is designed from the beginning in CAD.
Yeah.
Now, I struggle with that. And I can get involved in the car when I can physically see it and touch it. But looking at CAD screens, and the point is, you can't really have an opinion because it's digital and it's all linked. And the guys behind that, both the aesthetic designer and the body engineers, and of course the mechanical engineers, they are so comfortable in that world. But I struggle because I can't visualize, I can't touch, I can't feel it. What I can do is keep them at a sensible level, because if you give an engineer too much rope, then you're really in trouble. Are you a trained engineer?
Full member of the Institution of Engineering Technology.
So did you do an engineering degree?
Yeah.
Mechanical or automotive?
Actually, it was a holistic STEM degree. I only finished it last year because my background, I came from a pretty rough background. I joined the RAF in my late 20s. So it's all kind of aeronautical engineering. Radar engineer, effectively.
Okay.
So it's a bit of M&E, a bit of kind of audio, all sorts of bits and pieces. And I've kind of, now I'm working in engineering, leadership and management, so I'm less hands-on. But I've got, again, same sort of thing. I've got a really broad understanding, but I'm not an expert in anything specifically. But I get holistic engineering all the way through to how a human interacts with a machine and what their kind of cognitive reactions are to.
I was listening to a podcast about that this morning.
Yeah.
Sort of AI.
Yeah,
stuff.
All sorts of AI, yeah, but not just
so
machine
are you a mechanical
learning.
Engineer, or are you an electrical engineer, or not? Or are you just...
I would say, so it's a STEM BSc with honours. So it encompasses, I picked all the modules that meant something to me. So
well,
my
easy
background...
Ones.
Yeah, some of them. The ones that did have an exam, because I suck at exams.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
So I'll take that one.
Radar is, I mean, an SME in radar. I went to Afghanistan in 2014 and helped withdraw the last primary radar from Camp Bastion. So that's my area of expertise. But
bit of a mission.
It was a big job. I'm kind of a, you know, generally good engineer, but I'm not an expert in anything. But I make sure that I go after the people that I have a great working relationship with. And that are the experts, and then let them do their thing.
Well, I think we're saying the same thing. That almost started the sound of a job interview, but we'll discuss that afterwards. But
fine.
I think if you don't have that hands-on knowledge or the technical knowledge, I think you obviously have to have complete faith in the people who are doing it for you.
Definitely.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And there'd be a million different ways to get to the same outcome. One of my skills, and I haven't got many, is that I can have a decent conversation with an engineer.
Mm.
And that gives me an element of control, which means I can steer them, because I'm terrified of them, because genuinely that they will still, I'm sure someone will reinvent the wheel one day.
Mm.
I don't think the wheel will be round forever.
Okay.
The point is, they always want to reinvent.
Yeah. Always hunting for a problem to try and solve it.
Let's look at the cup. Now you could redesign the cup. But I would just say, look, can we just use the bloody cup? Because I'm not sure that cup's going to add much more value to this project. So can we just leave that alone?
Mm.
And so that's...
Interesting.
And if you don't have that ability, then you're in their hands. And then you've got to make sure that you're in the right hands.
I don't want this to turn into a super, because I'm sure you guys, like me and Richard, could do this technical stuff all day long. But
should we move on?
It's agile technology, agile methodology for me, which is chasing the most valuable thing and then pivoting when something's not working out and going immediately to the next thing. We'll do another thing. If you really want to learn all about that stuff, we'll do another podcast for it. Let's go back to, so you've been out on rally stages, you're kind of in it, you're not having as quite a tricky upbringing as your brother, but you're in it. Where does it change from that to I'm being brought along to no, there's genuine will to keep doing it yourself? Where does that happen?
Well, that again, that's a hot topic, because once you become a father, are you a father?
No, I'm not. No.
Well, once you become a father, then should you become a father? And there's pros and cons of that, no doubt. Then you've got to try and make these judgments for your kids.
Mm.
And so, if I look at my brother, I think he was probably ruined early on. There's no chance of him getting involved.
Right.
I think there are those that are born with a natural ability or a natural interest. It's the old sort of fed not bred type scenario. But there is a certain pressure. And at the beginning of this holidays, the last couple of weeks of finishing the GT1 before it went to California.
Yeah.
The boys came into the workshop and I was on a proper mission. We all were.
They're the best. Do you think they're the best?
They're the best.
Wow, okay.
The best and the worst. I mean, when you're sat...
Work-life balance is long gone at that point, right? When you're kind of, work-life balance is out the window at that point,
okay,
right?
And that's something you have to manage. But the point is, I'm lucky. I come into this building every day and there's 90 odd people around, all of whom are amazing.
Yeah.
And so when you're sat there at 8 o'clock at night in the middle of a shit fight, having just ordered 150 quid's worth of curry, and you're sat around a table having a curry and a beer before you do another few hours, which doesn't happen very often, by the way. So we typically arrive at 8, leave at 5, and it is very controlled.
Yeah.
But now and then,
we need to get stuff done.
So the point was, the boys said, they recognised that I was absolutely on it, but they also made the observation that I was clearly alive and enjoying it and enjoying that process. A couple of days later, I reflected on that with them and I said to them, I don't want my work ethic to be too daunting for you because I grew up with it. And the old man's 77.
Yeah. Right.
He's on site, obviously.
Of course he is.
He's not involved every day. I kicked him out 15 years ago because he was at his own shed.
Yeah, fine.
He's on site. He's a useful resource. He's a lovely pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But I grew up with this extraordinary work ethic that I could see and feel every single day.
Yeah.
And it's daunting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all I said to the boys was, I don't want that to be a
reason. You're not setting a standard that everyone else has to follow.
And I'd also say that maybe you can be clever around me and find a way to do it differently.
Mm.
There is no right way.
Yeah.
So there is an inevitable pressure, but again, one really great thing was that I went and worked elsewhere. And that was a bit by default. I got kicked out of school when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And long story, but again, let's just say it wasn't really for me.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything too naughty. It was like losing your driving license for 4 speeding fines. It was one of those jobs. Right. In the end, they said, look, probably best you find somewhere else.
Part ways. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fine. And then I, 5 miles away from here, I was welding up farm sheds. I worked for a mate of mine, Tim Riley, who had an injury, and I was building Datsuns with him. His claim to fame was he finished third in the Safari Rally in about 1960-something, inside his mother's tummy.
So, wow.
his mum was...
Again, that tells you what rallying's like.
His mum was Anne Riley, and she co-drove for Pat Moss-Carlson. She was the first ever professional co-driver because she used to take sickies off work, and it was fine up until she was on the front cover of the front page of the Times, having won Rome Liège Rome whilst being poorly. Anyway,
unbelievable.
So yeah. I was building Datsuns, building farm sheds, and then, of course, I did an awful lot of work with ProDrive.
Mm.
And I've got a couple of things. Fairly well known for my ADHD, which is why I get distracted. Secondly, I've got a good dose of OCD, and I'm looking across at that plug. Can you see that plug's upside down?
Which plug?
There's a plug there by the door, on the bottom, on the ground. There's three plugs on that railing. One's upside down.
Yeah, no, that I couldn't handle
that
either.
I've never sat in this position.
Yeah.
But part of this came from my work at ProDrive.
Do you want me to put something in front of the plug so you can't see it?
I'm just enjoying seeing it. But the point is, David ran, still does, an extraordinarily brilliant business.
Yeah.
And he had these wonderful clear desk policies, which I never really saw it happen, but in theory, he'd come along and wipe your desk clean every night if you left shit on it. Mm. And you could only have a red ProDrive mug, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I inherited a very different outlook on business through my work experience.
Mm.
And it was more than work experience. I worked there as a full-time basis. So I then came back into the business, and then the fun begins.
Right.
Long way of coming back to your story about at what point does it become a thing? Well, the reality is it didn't really ever become a thing. It wasn't intentional.
Mm.
I was driving. The last two seasons I did as a driver were in America.
Right.
And I drove for Mitsubishi and then a one-off drive for Hyundai, which could have led to something greater, should have led to something greater, as should my association with ProDrive and Subaru. But for lots of good reasons, no doubt that didn't happen. And I came to help out the old man for the Safari Rally in, it was 2003, so I came in about 2002 to train one of our friends and clients to be a driver.
Yeah, okay.
To co-drive for him on the Safari.
Wow.
Shocking decision. So Dad, in a typical fashion, said, well, look, you better get involved in building the car so you know all about the car.
Makes sense.
I never left, is the short version. And so the point is the driving came to an end. That was my decision to stop driving because I only wanted to do it at a very high level. And if I couldn't do that, I didn't want to do what so many have done. And end
what, up. Fade into the background and not be ever seen again? Or was it kind
of... A little bit of that, but also end up, you know, driving cars and doing manufacturer launches and just general general stuff, which just wouldn't have kept me interested. So, yeah, it was a bit by default. But then you start getting involved. And the first couple of years are quite pleasant whilst you're trying to learn the business, understand a bit.
Mm.
Then there's a period of 5 years which were awful.
Mm, okay.
And that's a power struggle.
Do you want to go into that anymore?
Well, the point is, so I've traveled the world with the old man. So the first long distance rally I did with him was in 1996. I was at uni and we went from Panama to Alaska rally. So that was 35 days or something.
Unbelievable.
A hell of a trip. I think the first 12 days we got 22 hours sleep driving through, started in Panama and then Nicaragua and Managua, I mean, all sorts of aguas. I'm not sure where the hell we ended up, but we ended up in Baja, the Baja Peninsula, where I ended up driving the ambulance because it was making a strange noise. And the drivers, the medics in the ambulance, were scared of it. So I drove it through the Baja. And the Baja, which is where Baja 1000 runs, had just come through. So the roads were trash, and I was driving this ambulance. That was a great story. But so I traveled the world with the old man, And we have a fantastic relationship. It's not that conventional, but it's fantastic. But then you're in a situation where there's a bit of a power struggle because I want to do some things differently.
Right.
But he's done it his way.
For years.
For 30 years.
Successfully, right?
Very successfully. Yeah. But he'd never sat behind a computer.
Mm.
The industry was changing. You know, there was a whole load of, let's say, bullshit that he wasn't really into.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when I joined... If you ordered a car, it'd be a phone call, sort of roughly speaking, agree a price.
Yeah.
Then when the car was finished, you'd ring him up, whether it was 6 months later or 2 years later, and then the car would disappear.
Yeah.
And the price was the price, and there would have been a bit of haggling probably. And, you know, his job was to build all the engines, all the gearboxes. He very rarely assembled cars, although, of course, he absolutely could, and he built his own car, but for London and Sydney, for example. But... it was a completely different... The Historic Rallying was doing this.
Mm.
The clients were different.
Yeah, okay.
And so it was a really difficult time because I wanted to take over.
Yeah.
And I say, last year...
Was he getting the same... What you were seeing, was he... Did he understand that it was changing or was that part... You know,
I'm not sure because... He's a really unique guy. He's pretty old school. And he's a very driven guy as well.
I mean,
just spent his life working here.
Yeah.
I mean, he missed my sister's christening. The church is 200 metres from where we're sitting.
Wow.
But he was building an engine, so he didn't go.
Yeah, okay.
Not in a bad way, he was just
busy. No, yeah. Well, so, yeah, I get it.
I'm not saying he was right or wrong, but ultimately, a family business is a tricky...
Of course it is, yeah.
Can be tricky.
Yeah.
So we had that 5-year miserable period, and he didn't give in, and nor did I. And we ended up obviously finding a way, and then, and clearly what we're now doing,
it
depends how you define success, and I've got plenty of things wrong, got a few things right, but the reason this business exists how it does now is because of me, taking it from an incredible base, to whatever we're doing now, And it's down to just hard work. It's just down to, and I've put the hours in.
I think for me, if you don't mind me saying, there's lots of people that put hard work in, and lots of businesses fail irrespective of hard work. For me, it's vision, culture within the company. It's a great network, great understanding of your customers' needs, being able to solve a problem. There's loads of things that go into
it. It doesn't
that.
Happen by mistake. I mean, I get it. Hard work alone is not necessarily a guarantee for success. But I'm not sitting here saying we've succeeded, actually. We are doing some great things, with great clients, with amazing people working here.
Yeah.
And yes, because of the way my mind works, I'm constantly dreaming stuff up. So I've seen things other people potentially haven't seen. I've gone about things. Let me talk about the Safari Rally, which is a rally where you go rallying in a Porsche.
Yeah.
I think it's a much more than that. It's an incredible experience. And I thought it was an incredible experience from 2003 as a co-driver, which was an incredibly tricky experience, but an amazing result with a great man driving. We finished third, so it was a huge success. But I recognized something pretty early on, which was when you shut the door in a car, and I'm gonna say a rally car, but you could easily say the same at 6 o'clock in the morning in a road car. When you shut the door, it's really peaceful.
Yeah.
And especially how the world is now with, we're constantly in touch with everything.
Overstimulized.
Yeah.
Constantly, yeah.
But all of a sudden, your world goes peaceful and you've got a piece of road to drive.
Yeah.
And no one can help you. So it doesn't matter how many PAs you've got or how many chefs you've got, you brought with you or where your pilot is. You've got you and your co-driver and you've got a car. And you've got to go from A to B as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly peaceful. It's a great, great place to be. And that's where I'm at my most peaceful, behind the
Same.
Wheel.
Same. And I'll refer back. So a couple of years ago, I was pretty stressed after COVID. Had a difficult day job. And I chose to take my 981 Cayman, it's just out there, on a solo road trip around Europe. So
good decision.
And that feeling... did the Col de Serini, Route Napoleon, and then Col de la Bonnette, so highest loop road in Europe. And I remember getting to the top of that loop road, you know, mountains below, and there's a feeling that is really hard to describe, that is the absence of noise.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is, but it's an amazing feeling. I've said this a million times, if you can't do it, but it doesn't matter what car you're in, it could be the crappiest car ever, find an opportunity to go out, whether it's with some friends, but do it and enjoy those moments because they're rare.
Yeah, and I think my the ultimate piece is still actually when you're driving and you're driving on a special stage with someone talking away to you. Testing is slightly different because I'm always thinking about the car.
Yeah, sure.
But the point is shut the door, and this is what I recognized. All these wonderful people we work with are hugely successful. They typically have to be to afford it. But where can they escape? And actually, it's very difficult to find escape. If you go on a nice boat or you're still connected and you're still not engaged. So I worked out that pretty quickly. And the other thing is, if you chuck a load of great people in the room together, then you're going to have a great time. So the Safari Rally or coming racing with us on the 2 litre cup.
Yeah.
There is a car element to it, right? Let's not forget.
Yeah.
And the winning isn't that important. For some people, it's very important. For others, it's not important at all. Mm. And for us as a company, you need to win occasionally. You don't have to win.
Yeah.
We just won the Gentleman's Trophy and the Gentleman Elite Trophy in the 2 litre cup this year. We didn't win the pro class because we didn't enter a pro. We won all three last year. We won the two, what I would consider the most important ones. So we've got people who will win.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got people who love driving, love company, love a glass of red wine. And I think I realized this earlier than most.
Mm.
Great people, great car, and great event. So let's go and do it. But the car is, what should we say, 30% of it?
Yeah. The conduit's making 50 the rest of it
at
happen.
Best. That car gives you access to this event,
this
experience. So again, we can all choose probably to buy a nice watch, a nice painting, I don't know what else. We can buy some material stuff if that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But actually experiences aren't that easy to buy.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
You can go and try and have a great experience. My point is I worked that out and then the rallying became an experience more than a rally. And maybe that's why we've ended up doing what we've done. Look, it's backed up by brilliant mechanical reliability, huge success in every form of motorsport. And that comes as a result from, that's the hard work bit and doing your job. So that's where I saw the business going.
Mm.
And I think actually even more now than ever, 20 years on, all of this stuff is about experiences, because whether we're able to drive cars like we've always driven them forever is probably something we should consider. I think the honest answer is yes. I don't think they'll ever ban us from driving cars. Mm. They might ban us from going to certain places, and that's fine. But actually, do we want to enjoy cars in somewhere where we want to be and have an experience? Yes.
Mm.
So that's what I reckon it's all about.
Amazing. So that difficult 5-year period's over. The growth of the company starts to happen.
Yeah.
Give me a couple of the highlights around, you know, where it changed from being something that was word of mouth and kind of, you've got that kind of constant, can you build us a car, please? We've got this event that we want to go and do, to let's turn this into a company that's well known around the world, to producing SCRS, which is where we first spoke, Bicester, or all the way through to, and like I said at the start, 911K, which still blows my mind.
It's mental.
And GT1. So
how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, it's going from that post 5-year difficult period to sitting here today. Again, I find it difficult to believe that's organic.
But it is, and that's the point. I haven't done anything that clever. I've worked pretty hard at it. I've been pretty dedicated.
Mm.
But I was asked this question yesterday. So I have thrown so much shit at the wall, some of it stuck.
Okay.
So the answer was always yes.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
Before you asked me the question.
Right.
So
I'll bear that in mind, by the way.
So it still pretty much is. And the other question I was asked yesterday was, what happened to all your lovely service clients? Because this was a service workshop. I said, well, on Sunday, I've had 10 days being pretty much bedbound with this bloody shoulder problem, which is never a great place for me to be because I just hate not doing something. But I still get all the info at emails. I don't reply to all of them, but I get them.
Mm.
Because You might at this point think I'm a control freak, which you could argue there's an element of that. But actually, it's a bit more than that.
Yeah.
I just want to know what's coming in.
Yeah.
So a guy emails me on the weekend, about a 3.2 engine rebuild, because he's almost certainly got a cracked head stud. So I'm still interested in that. So then, of course, then I speak to Paul in this instance, say, can you drop him a note and see if we can help him?
Mm.
But in the meantime, I have found myself in trouble so many times when the pressure's on, where I've said yes to something And at that point, you've got to deliver.
Yeah.
Failure is not an option. And that comes from rallying. It doesn't come from racing. And it doesn't come from road cars.
No.
So if you're restoring someone's 2.7 RS and you miss the deadline, well, okay, that's not good. But the guy didn't just miss the start of the Safari Rally or Le Mans Classic, right? So you can always bump it on a day or two or a week, which becomes a month, which becomes 6 months.
Yeah.
So, but when you're on a rally, particularly a rally, the clock never stops. There was no right, you know, you've done your qualifying session, you hang around in the pits for 3 hours. Mm. The rally clock is always running. Mm. You have to get shit done. So I said to a client in Copenhagen Grand Prix, which is a great event, the historic Grand Prix, which is open to all sorts of wonderful cars. He sat down and said, right, I want to go from Cairo to Cape Town. So this is just an idea. This is just to give you a clue.
Yeah.
I want to go to Cairo, Cape Town. Great, Roger. That sounds like an amazing trip. Can you arrange it? Yeah, absolutely, I can arrange that. I mean, literally, not even a hesitation. Of course we can.
Yeah.
I want to do it in 3 months. I want to start in Cairo. I want to meet you with my four cars and a team to look after me in 3 months. Yeah, no problem. Absolutely no problem at all. Full stop. Spend another half a day with him. Get on the plane, come home. A week later, I am at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got two computers running. I've got Google Earth, Google Maps. I've got all sorts of data going. How the hell? Like, firstly, where's Cairo? And how am I going to get from there to there? Did I think about, well, we better check about the political situation
in
I don't know, northern Somalia or wherever the hell we were. So that's the point.
Right.
Oh, my word. I've just said yes. And Roger knows me very well now, so should he ever listen to this? I haven't got the first idea how we were going to get there. Now, bearing in mind, okay, we'd rallied all over the world.
I was about to say, you've got some,
but it's
got
different.
Some history. Yeah.
We just turn up to rallies which have been organised by clever people and we go and run cars. But what I had in the back of my mind, the old man had done one of Philip Young's events quite recently, which was London to Cape Town.
Mm.
So, of course, there's a road book somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, again, all I'm thinking now is, I've said yes. Now start thinking outside the box. Of course, I'm not about to send someone in a Land Cruiser and do the route for me. So what should we do? Mm. Well, let's get the road book. Someone must have a copy. Or, okay, Google, what was the route? They had a problem and they ended up, I think, going across, I want to say to Jordan or something, because there was a political problem. Whatever. This typifies how I got to where I've got to. So it didn't matter whether it was about taking a client from Cairo to Cape Town or whether I was going to...
The actual question could have been anything. Here's something that we don't know how is going to happen, but it's really exciting.
Yeah.
Cool, I'll do it.
And I think the exciting bit is part of it, because I love dreaming shit up. Mm. I love new stuff. Which is why, with these lovely cars we're building now, I'm not going to build a volume of anything.
Yeah.
Because obviously the first point in any business, if you can scale something, well, there's probably more margin because you can amortize your development costs, all of that great stuff.
Yeah.
But that's fine, but it's not for me. Because I don't want to build 100. I don't want to commit myself to building 100 of anything. Now, okay, Safari Rally cars, we've built over 300.
Yeah.
And that's all event-based and it's year on year. But what you're not doing is on a production.
Yeah. They're not shuffling down a production. One guy doing one job repeatedly. Yeah.
And all of the other cars aren't, we don't have a production line as such, but we're going to streamline all of that because now there's a volume of cars. Right now, as we sit here.
But only for efficiency, right? Not for...
We've got 84 cars to build right now, across between race cars, rally cars, 911Ks, GT1s, bespoke one-off road cars, all of that type of stuff. So we've got to streamline that process a little bit. But that's how I got to where I got to. Mm. And the Cairo to Cape Town story just typifies anything, but it could have been... Well, it was a bit like ice driving. I started ice driving. That's 18 or 19 years old now. And that was an idea. I learned a whole load more about driving for the week I did WRC Sweden than I had done in all my driving up until that point.
Wild. And just zero grip, isn't it? Was that
just the grip, the environment, the feeling that you get when you get it right, the feeling you feel when you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
Plus there's an element of safety, false or otherwise, of great big snowbanks to hit.
Yeah.
And I started that with 5 clients and 3 cars for a week. And then the next October, I thought, oh, I'd better send an email out to a few people. So this is where I come back to the organic thing.
Mm.
I would literally get to October, November and go, oh, bugger. I haven't done anything about ice driving. Brr, anyone want to come ice driving? And after five years of
ping,
doing that,
ping, ping, ping,
yeah, everyone says yes. And there was a sort of watershed moment, 2008, when we were sort of in the middle of that financial crisis. And I thought, well, if anything is going to slow up my people coming ice driving, which is clearly a something you can do or not do, it doesn't change your life. Yeah. I mean, it can change your life. It's bloody brilliant. But I thought this will be the season. And actually, that then was our biggest season ever.
Mm.
And I think we turned over something like 100 grand that year. And at that point, I think, oh, wow, okay, this is a bit of a thing. And then meeting someone local who sort of wanted to change job. He seemed like a nice bloke. Yeah. I didn't know him. Seemed like a nice bloke. We had a couple of mates in common. I said, well, why don't you come and set up ice driving for me? I've no idea how it's going to work. As in, why don't you come and run it? Which was, that was a big step.
Yeah.
And of course, he was organised at Efficient. Rather than emailing everybody in November, it became a bit more structured.
Yeah.
So then he did a bit of a rebrand. We went from NorwayIceDriving.com to Below Zero Ice Driving. So that was our first branding exercise. And we were presented with all sorts of awful names, but Below Zero was quite cool. So
it's very cool, yeah.
We went with that. Bearing in mind, we were still using a logo that I designed on Microsoft Paint. So that was how.
I really want to see the original version of that.
It was literally. Do you remember Microsoft got rid of Microsoft Paint and they bought out Microsoft Paint Pro or something?
Something like that. Oh yeah, no, I remember.
But the whole world went mad, so they had to reintroduce Microsoft Paint.
Totally.
So my editing skills are based around Microsoft Paint and Excel, which many people don't realise you can do anything on Excel.
You can. I hate it with a passion.
Oh, I bloody love it. I love Excel. So point is. Tim came along, paid some attention to ice driving, and now we run 8 cars every day of the month, every day of the season for 2.5 months, and it's become a bigger business. And where we struggle there, weather can kill the season straight away.
Of course, yeah.
It can make it a zero profit season.
That happened last year, didn't it?
Last year had a great year, actually.
Or was it this year that's been a bit?
No, sorry. This year we haven't had a bad season for a while.
Okay.
But you can be very quickly off the lake for 10 days, and that really ruins your season.
Yeah.
Or, of course, crash damage. So there's a bit of that because I self-insure. But again, the organic thing is that's absolutely how that happened.
Yeah, okay.
This is a good idea. I learned a load when driving. Plus, it's great fun. Let's do that. And then, a few other people want to do it. Let's do a bit more of it. So across all areas of business, the restoration stuff, which is still we probably do 1 or 2 356 roadsters or speedsters because I particularly like them a year. There's always a 27 RS or something cool in resto. We recently restored a Le Mans, 74 Le Mans car. So there's still that element of really cool, original stuff. And then the next idea we could probably talk about would be the 911 K. So that was our first road car.
Yeah.
And the story's the same, by the way.
So, I mean, I'm a classic one for this, right? I don't listen to anyone else's podcasts. I don't watch anything else. So from what I understand, though, through accidentally finding a video, a client in the States was interested in doing something along these lines when actually I really want something that does ridiculous RPM. It's got to be on its tiptoes constantly. Was that something along the right lines?
Yeah, something along those lines. So I'm going to smile at the camera now. And Philip, when you watch this, you can smile with me. So the guy you just mentioned is not actually from the United States, although he does hang out there a lot. A lovely friend called Philip Cadori. So Philip came and did safari with us a few years ago. I can't remember. And I didn't really know who Philip was because I don't know who any of our clients are. I mean, there's the odd one. Jos Verstappen's coming this year. I know who Jos Verstappen is.
Yeah.
But what I don't do, so if I get an inquiry, and I have worked with a few people. The first thing they'll do is Google them and find out who they are. Well, I never do that.
Likewise, yeah.
Not into it. Yeah. Don't care.
Yeah.
Because I actually don't care. I'll meet anyone, and on face value, it's going to be all right. Okay. So yeah. It doesn't make any difference whether you know you ran Microsoft or you're working in the local petrol station to me.
Yeah.
So I did get a little feeling of who Philip was eventually, but he came and picked up his safari car actually on a Sunday. And I didn't really know him very well, but we went and we did Safari Rally together. And I knew very, very early on, and again, my life runs in Safari years. It has done since 2003, so every 2 years. It's always a marker in my life. When you're in the shit in a rally, that's when you know. And even as a 17-year-old, driving a van for ProDrive, I didn't mind explaining to hired co-drivers exactly what I thought about them when they were being selfish. When I didn't think it was in the best interests of the technicians or the team, I had no qualms about speaking my mind.
Yeah.
Some of that which is good, some of which is bad.
Yeah.
And there is a point in a client's life, some client's life, where you have to tell them to fuck off. And I don't know whether you can
say what you like. Yeah, yeah, it's fine.
And it happened once. It's happened more than once. The first time, and it's not always fuck off, but it's something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
The first time was an Austrian general in the army. His name was Willy Plesnik. I'm not going to ask where his funding came from, but he was a wonderful man. And he did, I think it was on Panama to Alaska. Could have been another long distance rally. But at one point, and Dab was running the team. I was just the owner's son, mechanicking.
Yeah.
I point blank told him to fuck off. I literally said, I tell you what, Willie, you can fuck off. This is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to solve your problem. But at the point where you're in trouble on a rally, you get to know someone.
Yeah.
And you know who they are.
Yeah.
And Philip, we had a problem with the regulations. And Philip either could have protested, which we would have won, and he would have finished third, or he ended up finishing fourth.
Mm.
And when he made the decision to say, hold on a minute, I came to the Safari Rally, never did I imagine I could finish in the top 10.
Yeah.
I'm going to finish third or fourth.
Yeah.
Let's just enjoy this
fourth
into context.
Rather than contained.
And at that point, I thought, okay, well, you're okay. You are more than okay. So during lockdown, everyone was on furlough, apart from four of us, plus the freelance guys, because they weren't protected by the government at that stage, so I wasn't ever going to leave them in the lurch. So, and by the way, at that point, the best thing in the world for me was that the phone would stop ringing.
Yeah.
I've always said, wouldn't it be great if we could have a year off? Well, COVID gave us that opportunity, although because of how furlough worked, it didn't quite give me the opportunity I wanted. Needless to say, I'm sat in the office, a bit bored.
Mm.
And I had always dreamed, in fact, I'd already taken a little commission that I'd made most extraordinarily out of a car sale where I'd helped someone. They were kind enough to send me a little commission. I said to them, I'm going to put it into a fund for making a lightweight car. He didn't ever buy a 911K, so he needs to have one. So I always had this in my mind. I also had another chat with a very good friend, Richard Cook, about a little short wheelbase lightweight car, because we were into 2-litre cup by then. And actually, Richard and I went to see the guys at Alf Holdings.
Mm.
Who are wonderful,
really
folks.
Cool,
amazing guys, brilliant cars, and obviously their business is primarily a parts business, and they build the odd car.
Yeah,
so clever them. But we, Richard and I, went down when we could first travel during lockdown. So there was a sort of idea there, but ultimately what happened was Philip wanted me to build a 997 Cup car into a road car.
Okay,
and again, brilliant idea. We've done it a few times. We'll get there another. I'm on with another one, different project. In the end, we decided against it, but we sort of hit on this lightweight thing.
Mm.
And that's it. Let's do it. So then you might say, well, you know, we were talking before about your project and budgets and self-funding and all this stuff. So I don't think about that. It's not that I don't have to think about it. I choose not to.
So, I'll bear that in mind.
So just to be really clear,
if
I think something's a good idea, I will find a way to do it.
Yes.
When the bank were asking too many questions about building my first building, I said, you know what, head off. It was a bit of a fuck off moment. Just you watch, I will find a way to build this building. So I built the building, I invited them back sort of a couple of months before it was finished. I said, right, now I need a bit of money. And they had a building, so they, stupid bankers, could suddenly realize it was a building.
Yeah.
So they weren't just in.
They weren't investing in an idea, in some, there was a thing that they could.
So that's that type of thing.
Yeah.
Now that does cause me some trouble. So all I usually need for a project is one willing client, typically a client friend, because they all become friends, to go, come on, I'll have the first car. And the beauty of doing that with Philip is he's pretty mental. And so between us...
I got that from the video, by the way.
Yeah.
It was really cool, yeah.
But between us, it just got out of hand. And And there we are. So
it sounds like two guys on a Saturday night, they got beers in hand, and there's like one-upmanship. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make it out of carbon fiber. I'll tell you what, let's stick a stupid engine in. Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's...
Whilst we're at it. Yeah. And it's exactly what happens. Now, and again, many of my clients will have received a message from me, some random message, which has just come into my mind. Shit, right, that's for you. Mm-hmm. Should we do this? And of course, the immediate answer is yes. And then you think about it again. And some of them don't for good reason, don't get done. But that was the story of 911K. It got massively out of hand in a brilliant way.
Yeah.
But at the heart of it is all our basic, well-known mechanical reliability. So let's say, mechanically, 80% of that car I could take to Kenya.
Wow.
Genuinely. I mean, okay, lightened a bit of it.
Yeah.
Panels are panels. It's a standard Porsche shape.
Yeah.
So invest in tooling and get on and do that. And then create some special parts around it. But the reality is 850 kilo, 11,000 RPM, not much traction. But actually it has got a lot of traction. It's got too much. And the next piece someone does on it, because someone else wants to have a drive in it, some lovely journo, the whole focus on that is how usable it is.
Mm.
So we could get into it now. We could drive to Banbury in sixth gear at 2,000 RPM and we'd be driving just a really good early car. You would never, ever know.
Really?
You would never, ever know. And then it has this split personality where it's absolutely mental.
Which is ridiculous.
And Philip actually still says to me, can I take traction away? And the answer is no.
Right.
It's got, I mean, actually, I don't even know how to, apart from ruin the ride and make it stiffer.
Yeah.
But it's got amazing traction. So you have to work to make it move. But there is, and for the time being, will never be any, let's say, strategic planning. This building now is full of grown-ups.
Mm.
I'm not one of them. So there is a lot more control.
Yeah.
There is a lot more planning.
Yeah.
And we're sitting above the new accounts office.
Yeah.
And they are desperately trying to keep up with why I just bought something.
Yeah.
But it is backed up by a brilliant team of people who are gently bringing me in line.
But if you just don't want it too much, though, because
I don't think you'd allow it anyway.
Yeah.
But that's how 911K happened. If I think something's a good idea, then I have a go. And now I've got a little bit of confidence that if I think it's a good idea, well, maybe I can find 20 or 30 people who think it's a good idea.
I'm sure, yeah.
So that comes from 20 years of having a go, 20 years of getting some of it right, more often than not. And yeah, there's been the odd, I've been down roads with gearbox development, which have never paid me back, never will pay me back. I'm glad I did it because I learned. So,
quick pivot, if it's all right.
Yeah.
In the timeline, so you got 911K. Rob Dickinson phones you up and says, "You want to do a safari car?"
Yeah. So that was where was that? So that was a bit before.
Yeah.
So that was, we built that car in COVID. So the first time Rob saw that car, which is genius, because again, he's an extraordinary guy. I consider him a good
mate.
Quite
similar in personality types and kind of like how your thinking is. And
shit, I don't know whether Rob would be happy with that.
Really?
Of course, there is some similarities because of the way he started his business. And I have to say this. I don't have to say this. I like to say this. Thank God for Rob. Thank God for Singer. Because they created a market that we are all enjoying.
Yeah.
And without them, and now someone else probably would have done it at some point, but without them, they raised the bar. And they're a fantastic bunch creating brilliant cars. Mm. So that was a project where, again, one of my, yeah, we can do that type things. But it was really literally through Chris Harris and through Rob's business partner at that time, Maz, a good client of theirs, dumped two cars in the yard. And they rang him and said, what are these for? He said, I'd like some rally cars. And they actually said, well, we don't know how to do that, but we know someone who does.
Yeah.
So that was through Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So phone call, come and see us. Went over to LA. Never met them. Never driven a Singer. Obviously knew all about them. Was a bit suspicious, if I'm honest. I didn't know how long the Singer Classic would look good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I was wrong. It looks great.
It looks amazing.
And what is it, 15, 20 years old maybe now?
Yeah.
15. That started off as a Singer Classic. Well, actually, I think it was even going to be standard. Just chuck some dampers on it. And literally, the first thing I did was measure some dampers for a 964 because we hadn't done much on 964s, made some brakes for it and started that. Next thing, Rob starts working his magic. We were about to commit to first tooling. Another car had been released. And Rob goes, okay, hold on a minute. We need to go again.
Okay, yeah.
So started again.
Why?
Bodily, the mechanics, mechanical side of it, we
yeah,
did.
Yeah, yeah,
and was
yeah,
pretty
yeah,
much
yeah.
set.
Yeah.
So yeah, that turned into an amazing thing. And what I saw in that opportunity was, okay, build a couple of cars, which could have become something huge in the end.
Yeah.
Now, because of Porsche's resistance, it didn't.
Yeah.
Another story. But actually, I didn't see that opportunity as that. And I knew it wasn't just that opportunity.
Mm.
And so the answer was yes, it didn't make me any money. But what it did was, A, it broke the internet. When that car
ridiculous.
Was launched, was crazy.
Yeah.
And B, it introduced us to a whole new yeah. client base.
Yeah, yeah.
And so again, that was a bit of me going, well, that's cool. Let's just say yes. And it became the most extraordinary dream project I'd ever been involved in. For a guy like me to build an unlimited rally car based on a Porsche 911.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better. With Singer, who at that time were the best stylists in that world.
I'd argue you still are.
Dream. Well, of course we are now, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, yeah.
That was a joke. But the opportunity I saw was actually a lot more than that one project.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I then helped them with a whole load of things. I had a very, very small part to play in DLS in terms of the handling, in terms of some of the engineering thinking behind it, but a really small part of a very big and great team. I helped a little bit with Williams and all of that stuff. And so I ended up with a really nice working relationship with those guys, and I still have that. But yeah, that was a really pivotal moment in the business.
Yeah, okay.
The new building was significant.
Yeah.
ACS, really significant. Safari's always just been this backbone to our business, which gives us a whole load of real life experience no one in the world has.
Yeah, yeah.
And then of course you had 911K and so it goes on.
And so it goes on, but we're going to head towards the end of the episode, but we can't leave GT1 behind, right? We can't. That's
no.
where we are right now. And
yeah,
actually,
right up to date.
It is, phenomenal. And I know a couple of people in the background have kind of supported some of that and hearing how passionate they are. But again, break the internet moment. There's lots of cool cars that have come out in the last few years. And then when that thing dropped,
yeah.
I think everybody stopped and just open mouth.
Yeah, another moment.
So
yeah.
And I'm going to hazard a guess. That was yet another, yeah, that sounds cool. Don't know how we're going to do it. We'll find a way.
Yeah, client drove in. I didn't know him very well. I've been introduced to him by a third party, but he drove in and with an original GT1, said, let's make some more. So we set about it. And the mechanical brains, the mechanical concept, as soon as I understood what a GT1 is, I thought, oh my God, this is too easy.
Mm.
993 chopped in half with a whole load of roll cage on the back.
Yeah.
So that was amazing. I knew immediately we could deal with that quite successfully. And then the key thing was teaming up with Florian Flatow, who did the aesthetic design.
Yeah.
So that's why tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
He's perhaps the best designer in the world
yeah.
for Porsche-inspired products.
Yeah.
So here we are. With a just a beautiful car.
It is beautiful, irrespective of its performance capability, interior and exterior.
Yeah,
it is just stunning to look at.
Yeah,
I'd say that if you weren't here.
No,
not,
it really, and I'm happy to say it really is, because thankfully it wasn't anything to do with me. It just happened to be a brilliant guy who's now working with us on the next couple of projects, which is amazing. But client comes in, shall we do it? Yes. In this case, it's always part funded.
Yeah.
Because that's a big undertaking, and it's terrifying. To actually stick your neck on the line.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing: the hard work, the talent, all of that stuff. But there's a certain point where you've got to be brave, and that's got to be proportionate to the amount of trouble you'll get yourself in. And I'm always sailing close to the wind. But I won't have it any other way.
And on that note, I'm going to say thank you to Richard. I'm sure you're going to have tons of questions. Stick them in the chat below. You can email me, info@rengineering.com, and I'll ask Richard those questions in the future. But massive thank you, Richard. This has been a dream for me. I've loved the opportunity. You'll see some B-roll and bits and pieces from anything that we've talked about so far. But thank you so much, Mr. Richard Tyle.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant.
Nice
thank
to see you.
Cheers. Nice one.
Well, once more, thank you again for joining me on the first episode back for this season. Much appreciated. I really hope you enjoyed that episode with Richard. If you've got any questions, there was quite a lot of references to putting questions in the chat. You can do that in Spotify if you want to do that in Spotify. Please don't forget to give us a like and a follow as well if you're a casual listener and you've dropped in from time to time. It really actually makes a difference, especially now and kind of get back into it again. It sets the algorithm so other people see it in their feeds as well. So it makes a big difference. Also, if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast streaming service, don't forget, if you can, give it a review, either a review in words or select one of the stars, 0 to 5, please give it a 5. That would be hugely helpful as well. You can tell I stutter around that because I always feel a bit weird by asking people for reviews and saying, please give it a 5-star review. But it does genuinely make a difference. For now, though, I have a trip to Belgium coming up to go and collect the last remaining part to finish my Cayman. There's tons of content already banked up to kind of take. If you've not seen the previous episodes about me building my Cayman, you can go and see those on YouTube right now, at Rengineering on YouTube. These last ones are going to be everything from the brake upgrade, a huge brake upgrade, all the way through the interior, all the way through to the end, and some of the styling and performance modifications that are happening right now. So stick around, lots more to come. I will be back next week with a really interesting Your Porsche story from a chap called Bruce. Bruce, if you're listening to this, hello, your episode is coming out, my friend. Asked me a few times whether it's coming out soon. I do hope you're doing well. It's January, February, isn't it? It's kind of pretty gloomy and wet and miserable out there. But if you're not going out for a drive, do spend some time with your friends, chatting away about cars and seeing if you can get some plans afoot for the rest of the season as well. For now, though, thank you so much. I'll see you next time. Take care for now. Bye bye.